The following program, The Russ Belville Show, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate to the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate any illegal activity and encourage all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers on The Russ Belville Show are their own, and The Russ Belville Show cannot be held legally responsible for their validity or reliability. Viewer discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it,
and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization. To the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
I hear you. You had a question for me.
Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
Good day, tokers and tokats. Welcome to the show. It is Tuesday, August 6, 2013, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. It's also the 68th anniversary of the United States dropping the first nuclear weapon in history on the city of Hiroshima, Japan. So there's that for your day in history. On today's show concerning marijuana, we've got a lot of things to bring to you today. You know, the Joker to buy Batman is Kevin Sabet, the head of the Drug Policy Institute down in Florida, the founder of Project SAM, Smart Approaches to Marijuana. He has a post up on Huffington Post that goes into quite a bit of detail and rant, at least for him, on the recent audits in Colorado on their medical marijuana program and how that means we should continue locking people up in cages for marijuana. He never allows comments on his Huffington Post articles because everybody jumps in quickly and debunks him. So that's my job here on the Russ Belville Show. We're going to take some time in the radical rant to answer Kevin Sabet's Colorado madness. In Behind the Headlines today, a terrible story coming out of Texas. Again, we had terrible story from Texas yesterday. This one hits home because of my friendship with Lindsay Reinhart and having to see her go through all the Child Protective Services hassles in the state of Idaho. Well, this one in Texas has turned out terribly. A two-year-old girl was killed by her foster parent while the child was taken away because her natural parents smoked pot. What about the children? Indeed. We've also got some stories in our half past. We're going to do a cannabis community chat. We got more videos from River Rock TV in Colorado, a video from their road trip, and another medical marijuana patient story, this one from a former pro football player. Before we get to all of that, we have got also our 420 radio headlines. And in the news today, we've got news from Uruguay, Colorado, Washington, Michigan, and Florida. And at 20 after, Bacon Dan will be calling in to give us the load down on today's Electric Tuesday Daily Toker Tunes. Gosh, it was just like I saw Bacon Dan last night at Karaoke from Hell at Dante's. We'll talk a little bit about that too. Stick around, it's the Russ Belville Show here on 420radio.org. Please help us stay on the air. Become a VIP member today. Visit 420radio.org. We are public radio for marijuana legalization, and we only stay alive thanks to your support.
We'll be right back after these messages from our 420 friendly sponsors. Support these advertisers because their ad money goes straight to the Russ Belville Show. You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
The law offices of Omar Figueroa would like to remind you to stand up for your rights. Please do not give up your precious liberties. There's nothing wrong with standing up for our constitutional rights, and in fact, it's the only way to honor the Constitution that recognizes our natural rights. Treat law enforcement with respect and respect the Constitution by standing up for your rights. If you are detained or arrested, stand up for your rights by repeating, I respectfully invoke all my legal and constitutional rights. I do not consent to any search and seizure. I want to remain silent, and I want to speak to my attorney, Omar Figueroa. Omar Figueroa has more than a decade of experience in federal and California courts and graduated from Yale University, Stanford Law School, and Trial Lawyers College. Please contact the law offices of Omar Figueroa at 415-489-0420 or 707-829-0215 or on the web at www.omarfigueroa.com.
This is your 420 Radio News for Tuesday, August 6, 2013. I'm Russ Belleville. Michigan Medical Marijuana Panel to consider adding PTSD, autism, asthma, and insomnia to the law, from MLive.com. A reconstituted state panel on Tuesday is expected to consider petitions seeking to add autism, asthma, insomnia, and post-traumatic stress disorder to the list of debilitating conditions suitable for treatment under Michigan's medical marijuana law. The Michigan Medical Marijuana Act Review Panel, established under administrative rules in 2009, did not meet until 2012. Earlier this year, panel members voted to recommend adding Parkinson's disease and PTSD to a list of conditions that would allow an individual to qualify for a medical marijuana card, but the panel was disbanded in late April and their recommendations denied because the Michigan Department of Licensing and Regulatory Affairs determined it had not appointed members in accordance with the administrative rules. The Michigan Medical Marijuana Act Review Panel is expected to consider petitions for additional ailments during a Tuesday afternoon meeting at the Michigan Library and Historical Center in Lansing. Uruguay's leftist president opened to referendum on regulating marijuana, from rawstory.com. Uruguay's president Jose Mujica said in an interview published Monday he is open to a referendum on a bill to have the government control and regulate marijuana sales and distribution. The bill was passed by the lower house of Uruguay's legislature last week and now awaits action by the Senate. Mujica's leftist government supports it. But opposition parties are against the idea, and a poll released last week said so are 63% of Uruguayans. After last week's vote, opposition lawmakers said that if the bill becomes law, they will push for a referendum to overturn it. Many Uruguayans are concerned the law will make foreign tourists think the small South American country is a great place to unwind with marijuana or something stronger. Political accusations and intrigue nag medical marijuana group in Florida, from MiamiHerald.com. Libertarian political consultant Roger Stone had a falling out with a Florida medical marijuana group and accused it Tuesday of acting like a front for Democrat Charlie Crist if he decides to run for governor next year. People United for Medical Marijuana, or PUFM's de facto manager, Ben Pallara, denied Stone's claims as untrue and disputed his interpretation of the proposed constitutional amendment as well. Stone's criticism comes at a rough time for PUFM, which is struggling to collect more than 683,000 valid voter petitions in just a few months in order to simply make the 2014 ballot. But Stone, an early backer of the effort, wrote that he noticed a change in PUFM after it was recently taken over by trial lawyer John Morgan, a major Democratic fundraiser who employs Crist in his legal office. Polls indicate Crist would be the toughest opponent for Republican Governor Rick Scott. One early poll by PUFM indicated medical marijuana could be a significant issue in the governor's race and could help a candidate who embraces it. Scott is opposed. In all, two PUFM surveys from different pollsters and one by an independent group found about 7 in 10 Florida voters would likely back the type of medical marijuana amendment proposed. It takes 60% voter approval to pass a Florida constitutional amendment. Hearing set to help set marijuana policies, from HeraldNet.com. The first of five public hearings in Washington on regulating a new system for legally growing, distributing, and selling recreational marijuana is scheduled Tuesday in Everett. The hearing begins at 1 p.m. at the Everett Comcast Arena Conference Center. The new statewide system for legalizing marijuana is regulated by Washington's Liquor Control Board. The state agency is responsible for carrying out the legalization of the sale and possession of up to an ounce of marijuana for adults. The proposed regulations spell out the licensing of marijuana producers, processors, and retailers, and the taxing of marijuana. The first store selling marijuana are expected to open next year. The biggest concerns involve the differences between the untaxed and essentially uncontrolled medical marijuana stores and the state's taxed and regulated system for growing and selling recreational marijuana. Having this dual system will put recreational marijuana growers and retailers at a price disadvantage. Groundwork laid, growers turn to hemp in Colorado from the New York Times. Along the plains of eastern Colorado, on a patch of soil where his father once raised alfalfa, Ryan Laughlin is growing a leafy green challenge to the nation's drug laws. His fields are sown with hemp, a tame cousin of marijuana that was once grown openly in the United States, but is now outlawed as a controlled substance. Mr. Laughlin's 60-acre experiment is one of an estimated 24 small hemp plantings sprouting in Colorado. Colorado has set up an industrial hemp commission to write rules to register hemp farmers and charge them a fee to grow the crop commercially. This has been your 420 Radio News for Tuesday, August 6, 2013. I'm Russ Belville. When we come back, we go behind the headlines of a tragic story from Texas where a 2-year-old girl was killed by her foster parent after being taken away by Child Protective Services for her parents' marijuana use. You're listening to The Russ Belville Show on 420radio.org. We'll be right back.
If you're an adult who enjoys a good beer, there's a similar product you might want to know about. One without all the calories and serious health problems. Less toxic so it doesn't cause hangovers or overdose deaths, and it's not linked to violence or reckless behavior. Marijuana. Less harmful than alcohol, and time to treat it that way. For more information, visit marijuanaissafer.org.
Welcome. It's Danny Danko from High Times Magazine, and I'm here with Mr. Kyle Cushman, and we're talking about integrated pest management. Now, Kyle, I see you're using these yellow sticky traps. What's the purpose of those?
It is just a good part of routine IPM, integrated pest management, along with neem oil, regular spraying of neem oil every second or third day. And it's just good to keep down to prevent an infestation before it happens. Okay. So it's kind of like that canary in the coal mine thing where it'll let you know ahead of time by seeing how many bugs there if you need to employ something stronger, if you're going to need to use biological controls or some chemical insecticides.
Wow, cool. And also I'd like people to know the reason these sticky traps are yellow is that the bugs are attracted to that color. It's the color of a dying leaf, which makes a welcome home for them. So always remove any yellowing leaves so as not to create a home for pests.
Yes. Yellow Romano leaves. Go away.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Kyle. And this has been a lesson in integrated pest management.
Don't touch that dial. We'll be right back after a word from these 420 friendly sponsors. Wait a minute. This is internet radio. There are no dials here.
Welcome back, everyone. Time for us to go behind the headlines once again to the state of Texas, where yesterday we reported on roadside body cavity searches against women suspected of hiding marijuana in their vaginas. Today is a much, much more tragic story. Coming from RT.com, toddler killed after taken by Child Protective Services from her parents. And the 2-year-old girl, the foster mother, has been charged with murder, and she died from severe head injury. The young girl's name was Alexandria Hill, and she was given to the 54-year-old foster parent, Cheryl Small, because the Texas Department of Family and Protective Services determined that her biological parents, Joshua, the father, and the mother, who's not named in the story, were neglecting her, were neglecting 2-year-old Alexandria. It was the determination that they were neglectful supervision is the actual term. And the biological father, Joshua Hill, told KVUE-TV that He and Alexandria's mother lost full custody of their daughter last November after the Department of Family and Protective Services accused them of neglectful supervision. Mr. Hill said the agency made that determination, quote, because her mother and I smoked pot at the time, end quote. According to Joshua, the parents only smoked while their daughter was asleep. And I know a lot of people who have children of all ages that are in this movement that are pot smokers. And to think that their use of marijuana, which is so much more responsible than most parents' use of alcohol. You know, I remember with my ex-wife's family where we would go on these picnics up in Washington State where an entire picnic table is just covered with bottles of alcohol and cases of beer and bottles of wine, just openly laying out there, glasses full of alcohol, just laying around, and kids running all around this where they could easily get into it. And that wasn't a concern. That wasn't neglectful supervision. But the parents I know who are marijuana parents who take care of their kids are so careful to keep it put away, to not be seen even smoking in front of their kid. And to think that their kid can be taken away by the state and given to someone who would kill the child. Now, the story that happened here, Joshua got a phone call on Monday night telling him his daughter was on life support. They wouldn't tell him what condition she was in or what was wrong or what was happened. All they would say is that he needed to come down to the hospital. And when he got there, his little two-year-old girl was in a coma. Now, the foster mom said that she was swinging Alexandria around, you know, playing the little helicopter game or whatever you call it, and accidentally let go, and she fell and hit her head. But the people examining it there called BS on that and examined her and found three symptoms of traumatic brain injury and asked more questions. The foster mom later admitted to being frustrated with the girl and swinging her over her head and down near the ground with a lot of force three times. On the third time, Alexandria's head hit the floor, and they had to take her off life support today, and now she's gone. Now, if that doesn't make you mad enough, this woman, Cheryl Small, was previously accused of neglect. This is reported by KXAN News, a spokesperson for Texas Department of Family and Protective Services. She was previously accused of neglect after a child in her care was reportedly suffering from bruising and lead poisoning. Lead poisoning! But, quote, no deficiencies were found, end quote. And they did take a second foster child away from her. And what we find here is that in another story from KVUE, police say Mrs. Small said she wanted to foster more children to earn extra income. The adoption agency that placed Alexandria pays foster families up to $600 a month to take care of kids. Alexandria, a little two-year-old girl, was just a way of paying the rent for Cheryl Small, while the parents who love that girl, who had to bury their child, had their girl taken away from them by the state over smoking pot in private away from their child. And the state also said that Joshua could not, the mother, Mary Sweeney, suffered from seizures, and a doctor determined she is not allowed to drive or be alone with Alexandria. But the state also said that Alexandria could not live with Joshua at his parents' home, because Joshua was living at his parents' place, because his dad, the paternal grandfather, is a registered sexual offender for an offense that happened more than 20 years ago. So it looks like at every turn, these poor young parents trying to raise their two-year-old, it's just so sad. And there is so much to be uncovered about Child Protective Services, this profit system that incentivizes the state, first of all, to take children away from parents that are perfectly decent parents. There's an incentive program. There are federal reimbursements the state gets when it takes kids out of dangerous, what are deemed to be dangerous situations, you know, like someone growing a pot plant. And then there are more monies that are paid to the state that encourage the state not to try to fix the biological family, but to place the child with foster or out into adoption. There's more money to be made there. And then there's the profit motive of the foster parents who get that $600 a month or whatever it is for every child. This is wrong, people. It's just wrong. What about the children? Isn't that what they always say about marijuana prohibition? What about the children? Well, if not for marijuana prohibition, Alexandria Hill would be celebrating her third birthday in a few months.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would sell you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
Ever wonder how often to change your bong water? The most effective method for baking pot brownies? The best destinations for a ganja getaway? How to hide herb in your car? Whether to grow your own? How precisely to legalize it? Or how something as wonderful as marijuana ever got to be illegal in the first place? Finally, you can find all these answers and much more in the official High Times Pot Smoker's Handbook, featuring 420 things to do when you're stoned. Since 1974, High Times magazine has covered marijuana in all its aspects and wonders, from cultivation to legalization to the herb's enduring and exalted place in popular culture. Packed with inside information, the official High Times Pot Smoker's Handbook wove all of this collected wisdom together into a single indispensable ganja guide, including an entertaining look at marijuana's history, profiles of herb-friendly travel destinations and festivals, favorite potluck recipes from the High Times staff, smoking skills, advocacy and activism, essential marijuana movies and songs, profiles of famous cannabis strains, comprehensive growing information, celebrity endorsements, and much more. This is truly, finally, the ultimate guide to green living.
Big Daddy thinks.
Boogie, rollerin, rollerin, rollerin.
Oh yeah, this is Big Daddy, and I'll be your freakazoid every Thursday night, right here at the Funky Roller Rink.
Funky Roller Rink.
11 Eastern, 8 Pacific.
Funky Roller Rink.
Everyone knows music and marijuana go together, so let's wind up our 20 after break with the Russ Belville Show's Daily Toker Tunes, the best in pod-safe 420 music from around the web. Today is Electric Tuesday, featuring the latest in electronic dance music and other cutting-edge genres. You can get downloads and more information about all our Daily Toker Tunes by visiting music.radicalrust.com. Now, sit back and enjoy your Daily Toker Tune.
All right, it's time for us to get Portland's biggest fan on the show. It's Bacon Dan calling in. How you doing, Bacon Dan?
I am doing phenomenal today, Russ. And how are you doing after that awesome night last night at karaoke?
I'll tell you what, at 45, I don't bounce back from that stuff like I used to, but I had a good time, I'll tell you that.
Good, good. It was, and I'll tell you what, man, you were phenomenal on stage. The people loved you.
Oh, well, thank you. Been on a few stages. But for folks who don't know what we're talking about, there's this bar in Portland called Dante's, and it's, you know, got the whole red light and flames thing going on. It's kind of known for sin, I guess you could say. And on Monday nights, they have Karaoke from Hell, which is a live band with a huge repertoire of songs, and you get up and you sing live. Live karaoke. So I sang Crazy Train and Comfortably Numb. So yeah, it was fun. Thanks for having me out there.
Definitely a good time it was. And then we met some really cool British people, and I myself sang two songs. All in all, just a hell of a good night. And it's once again hot as hell here in Portland, Oregon.
Oh yeah, having a great, great time. And Bacon Dan, I understand also you recently had the opportunity to sample some of Portland's finest bacon.
Absolutely. I was a judge at the third annual Bacon Bowl, which was at Dante's. Got to sample 25 different local dishes, including a bacon almond cheesecake, a bacon baklava, which was freaking amazing, and that came with bacon whipped cream to dip in, and deep-fried chocolate-covered bacon.
What fun, and your arteries will curse you for it later, I'm sure. All right, let's get to our tune here, and I don't know who the artist is because it didn't say on the track. So do you know the artist behind this track?
Yes, this is Dan May. We've had a song from him before, a huge mashup guy. I mean, he's blazing, no pun, actually pun intended, all over YouTube and the mashup circuits in Europe. You can look it up. His first name is Dan, last name M-E-I. The song is The Final Cannonball, taking cues from Europe's song, The Final Countdown, and throwing a nice little twist on it. It'll get you up, get you grooving and moving. You're going to love it. So pack a bowl and enjoy this.
All right, here we go. The Final Cannonball here for your Electric Tuesday. Thanks, Bacon Dan, and we'll see you later.
Is a banana. This is a cat. This is fire. This is harmless and actually helpful to some people. Don't believe everything you hear. The fact is that every major health organization rejects smoked marijuana. Now that the smoke is cleared, discover truecompassion.org.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson, and I need your help. Alcohol prohibition didn't work in the 20s, and marijuana prohibition isn't working today. It's time we stop arresting law-abiding citizens because they prefer marijuana over alcohol. Nearly 2,000 Americans are arrested every day on marijuana charges. We're unfairly destroying the lives and careers of hundreds of thousands of people each year simply because they smoke marijuana. These are not criminals. They're average citizens like you, good neighbors who work hard, raise families, pay taxes, and contribute to their communities. We need your help to end marijuana prohibition once and for all. It's the fair thing to do.
For more information, contact NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Call toll-free 888-67-NORML or visit their website at norml.org.
cannabis community includes a diverse set of activists and nonprofits working to end the prohibition of marijuana. We take the time to hear the stories of reform on the Russ Belville Show's Cannabis Community Chat.
Welcome back, everyone. 30 after the hour. And for today's Cannabis Community Chat, I've got some more video from River Rock TV in Denver, Colorado. Hope you'll excuse me putting the videos up, kind of like the substitute teacher and all. But I have to pack and get ready to go to Miami. I'm actually headed to Fort Lauderdale, Florida, and then we'll get picked up there and head to Miami. I will be spending the next 2 weeks in the state of Florida, and I'm traveling from top to bottom to interview some of the movers and shakers in the Florida medical and legalization scene. So we will be meeting up with Steve Burke, the guy running for the mayor of Miami Beach. He was also in those videos, Should Be Legalized and Pot Shop, those parody videos that we've played for you. We'll also be meeting on Friday. Join us live. We will be at the home of Kathy Jordan, the Lou Gehrig's disease patient, who is the namesake of the medical marijuana bill in the state of Florida. On Saturday, we'll be attending a fundraiser for Steve Burke. We'll also be meeting with Bill Weiland from Law Enforcement Against Prohibition at his home. And then the following week on Monday, a Monday morning interview with Robert Platshorn, the Black Tuna, which we will record and play later in the week. Live, we'll be visiting with Kyle Vogt, another member of Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. And we are trying to get John Morgan, the Orlando attorney, as well as Norm Kent, the chair of Normal, who's in South Beach. We have a few more names that we might be able to get interviews from. So stay tuned here to 420 Radio. Follow my Twitter account at Radical Russ, and we'll keep you apprised at what's going on my 2 weeks in Florida. I fly out tonight. I land tomorrow morning. It'll be a long time on a plane. Fortunately, I have medibles. All right, let's get to our cannabis community chat. These are more patient stories from River Rock in Denver, Colorado. Enjoy.
I was told a month ago to bide my time and take it slow. Then I learned just yesterday to rush and never waste the day. Now I'm convinced the whole day long that all I learn is always wrong. But things are true that I forget. Taught that to me yet. I see the men in the morning.
Jace. I have multiple injuries. My first one is in football. I played with the played college at Colorado State, and then played professionally for a while until I had a blowout on my shoulder. A lineman landed on me and ripped all the cartilage out of my left socket, all the way down my bicep tendon, and basically that injury ruined my career. The other injury that I've sustained, fell off a crane from about 12 feet high and landed on the right side of my face, on my head, and basically shoved everything, shattered my zygomatic arch, and then a right eye orbit blowout fracture, and shoved everything this way to the left so hard it fractured the side of my nose, and my top row of teeth was inside my bottom row, and I had recovered and had reconstructive facial surgery done. They flight-flighted me to Lubbock, Texas. This was in eastern New Mexico at the time. And, I recovered and went back to work inside of 40 days. I was on a morphine drip for 2 weeks before the operation due to the swelling to go down before they cut on me. And you can't hardly see it, but I have 36 stitches here and I have 3 scars even in my mouth and my nose. But the next basic thing that became an issue was the chronic head pain. I couldn't function. It was one of those things I was just not telling people and just kind of acting like it wasn't there. And I had to go start pursuing a way of finding a quality of life because I didn't have any. And the amount of specialists I've seen is just ridiculous. It's stretched it all the way from the east to the west coast. I've been everywhere from Portland, Oregon to Tennessee and the Dallas Migraine Center, Scott and White and the Barrows Institute, Phoenix. I was prepped for and was going to go in, but it just wasn't a move I was willing to make at the time. And my main specialist that I found started performing procedures in my neck. He had done an MRI on my neck, which no doctor had ever looked in my neck, and found that all 7 levels of my neck, C1 through C7, are flattened out like knives, and they're actually putting pressure on my nerves and causing muscle spasms behind my right ear. Because that side of my face was numb for the 2 years it was, when my anatomy grew back, it grew back differently from a normal human, and he could not find the Gasserian ganglion nerve block was a bust, and I just had numerous new nerve blocks. I've had occipital lobes, cervicals, 2 through 4 done in a burn, 5, 6, and 7, all on my neck. You could probably stick a knife in it, I wouldn't feel it, it's that numb. But, you know, after you get a rhizotomy, you have so much soreness and so much pain from that, you almost have to either take narcotics or take any kind of pain pill or muscle relaxing pill to even do your physical therapy, your stretches, all of the things that they want you to do to help the soreness keep from building up. And I've actually gotten involved with just a lot of doctors not wanting to take my case on, and after the first round of rhizotomies, I'd say after about the first year, which would have been in 2010, I would get about 30-40% reduction in pain, but then it would come back after 4 or 5 months. And of course, this was all the while I was on narcotic pain pills, and the emergency room visits were ridiculous. It was just nonstop at times, because we would often get second opinions, and one of the second opinion doctors had shotgunned my pain and broke OCG and the AMA guidelines, and he actually gave me dilated. When I go to the ERs, they've shaved my chest and put fentanyl patches on. And all it's done is just make me suffer the side effects all the while and ruin my life because I got out of control on the pain pills. Okay, so I had trigeminal neuralgia. There's three branches in your head. There's top branch, middle branch, and lower branch. I completely shattered the middle branch. And there's a lot of holes in your skull that emerges and exits. It either goes into or it comes out of your skull that I had shattered. And I also have began to wear a TENS unit that uses electrical pulses to shut the nerve gates down in my neck. But the greatest thing that I found about these last month, 2 months, ever since I came to River Rock, is that I have not had to be on my muscle relaxer pills. I have not been wearing the TENS unit near as often. I actually have shower patches that I wear 2 days at a time, and it's an electrical unit. It's a little bit bigger than an old school cell phone. It's adjustable and everything. It's just a real pain in the neck. And cannabis and River Rock and all of their options, their CBD pills, their hybrid and CBN, just completely relaxed me. The first time I took those, I ripped that TENS unit off the back of my neck. It's on my nerves anyway, but it relaxed me so much and took care of my pain. I didn't feel like I needed it on. And no narcotic has ever given me that effect. If it wasn't for cannabis, my life in the mornings, I also suffer from chronic nausea. That's usually activity induced, but for some reason it's turned to a morning thing. So for about an hour to 2 hours every morning, my day is filled with nauseousness. And so cannabis has relieved me in that area. I wasn't ever really a big proponent of. I knew that cannabis was an option, but I never really thought about it being an option in my life. And now that I do, now that I have, it's been a miserable last 5 years, and these last 2 or 3 months have been great. I have my life back. I'm able to be a father. I'm able to be a husband and just enjoy my kids and have a quality of life where I once didn't. And it's just so important for people to understand why. You know, doctors, all they want to do is push scripts on you. You know, there's not a doctor, there's not something that anybody out there can't say that I haven't either experienced, been through, seen, or dealt with. And if doctors could just stop pushing narcotics and tell their patients, you know, have an open mind toward cannabis because it's an option too. You know, I don't care if you're on the East Coast, if you're on the West Coast, I don't know where you're at. I was kind of from New Mexico area, went to school up here, but it doesn't matter. You do what you have to do to sustain and keep a quality of life. And if cannabis is it and your family doesn't like it or others don't like it because of their stance, well, you know, they're not the ones puking and dealing with the pain and watching how their life has just gotten flipped upside down because of their medical condition. And without cannabis, I wouldn't be sitting here talking right now.
To get another patient story from the folks at River Rock TV in Colorado. Again, these stories are so important to getting through to people's thick skulls. This is really medicine. It's really working for people. If anybody deserves to be able to use cannabis and be left alone, it's that guy. All right, when we come back, we got time for a radical rant. Kevin Sabet's latest post on Huffington Post won't accept comments, so I will make them here. Be right back.
We'll be right back after these messages from our 420 friendly sponsors. Support these advertisers because their ad money goes straight to the Russ Belville Show. You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. We'll be right back.
to do, folks. I'm Sarah Broach, and I've come out here to the Wild Wild West in search of the marijuana green rush. I'd like to let y'all in on an itty-bitty secret. We've come out here to start the world's first international marijuana business called Prohibition Brands, and we're a marijuana blending company.
Hey y'all, Prohibition Brands is the marijuana equal of a bottle of Budweiser or a pack of Marlboros.
Our brands include Roaches, Marijuanettes, and La Cubana.
We're trying to raise up to $50 million through venture capital groups, crowdfunding sites, and investors just like you. So that's right, even you. Yes, you sitting home on your couch, you can be part of the marijuana green rush.
Our patent-pending technology creates the world's first marijuana filter.
And we've created innovations for preserving freshness.
For roadshow dates, employment opportunities, or how to get involved, visit us online at www.prohibitionbrands.com. Prohibition Brands, science in smoking.
When I was in England, I experimented with marijuana a time or two, and I didn't like it, and didn't inhale, and never tried it again.
I think you'd probably be a lot cooler if you had, Mr. President.
I said, hey, do you have a joint cancer? Would be a lot cooler if you did. Lie to don't hide it.
Lie to don't hide it.
Oh, lie to don't hide it.
Lie to don't hide it.
Just lie to don't.
You want answers?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
You want answers?
You have offended my family.
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth.
And you have offended a Shaolin temple.
You can't handle the truth.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious, and don't call me Shirley.
Radical rant.
All right, folks. Kevin Sabet's got a post up. It was actually posted a little while ago, July 29th. Hadn't had the time to get to it, and of course he doesn't leave the comments open, so we make our comments right here in the Radical Rant. And this time Kevin has taken a look at these two recent audits that happened at Denver at the city level and Colorado at the state level regarding their regulation, or failure to regulate, as he calls it, medical marijuana. And he opens by saying, most of us have known for a while that marijuana has enjoyed de facto legalization status in a few places for a long while now. Parentheses, you know who you are. And this is, of course, his dig at Oregon, California, Colorado, basically medical marijuana states where, in his estimation, all you need to do is lie and fake some ailment and you easily get a medical marijuana card. I don't know how it works in Colorado. It's certainly not that easy in Oregon. California, I'll give you. All right, so he's reporting on these two reports that were issued in Colorado with regard to the regulation of medical marijuana. And here were some of the points, and I just like to rebut them one at a time here. One of the points made, and he's Kevin's quoting from these audits and trying to make a big deal out of it. So one of the points was, public health does not sufficiently oversee physicians who make medical marijuana recommendations. We found evidence suggesting that some physicians may be making inappropriate recommendations. Oh, no. Some people who aren't sick enough might be getting marijuana. Some people who might even be healthy are getting marijuana. In a state that just voted to legalize recreational use of marijuana. Why is this a big deal? We are finding, okay, that perhaps trying to come up with some list of conditions to figure out who's sick enough to protect and who's healthy enough to put in a cage is an unworkable bureaucratic nightmare. That's what we're finding out from that. This is one of those situations where medical marijuana is kind of set up to fail. because it's impossible to repeal the law of supply and demand. And so long as there are healthy people who want to smoke pot and there is a medical program that will protect them, some of them are going to find their way in. And then the opponents like Kevin Sabet go, well, see, medical marijuana doesn't work. Right. It can't work. It's a stopgap measure. It's a way station in between complete prohibition and complete legalization for all people. We've always known it to be that way. It's untenable to maintain a natural plant medical marijuana system alongside a black market. It's just never going to work. Another point he brings up, 12 physicians made recommendations for 50% of the 108,000 patients, with one physician making a whopping 8,400 recommendations. Right, and you know why that is. That's because the doctors who want to make recommendations, the ones who are seeing their regular patients, sometimes they're VA doctors, sometimes they're working at a university hospital, sometimes they're involved with a clinic that has operating procedures or insurance that prohibit them from recommending medical cannabis. A lot of these doctors also aren't informed or educated. Some of the older doctors don't know about the benefits of medical cannabis. Saying that it's surprising that a few doctors made most of the recommendations in a medical marijuana state is like being surprised that one abortion doctor did all the abortions in Wichita, Kansas. Because there's only one. Similarly, with medical marijuana, there are situations in all these medical marijuana states where doctors who want to write or could write won't write. And that's where the specialists come in. Let's see, he makes another complaint here. Public health has not established a process for caregivers to indicate the significant responsibilities they are assuming for managing the well-being of their patients or for documenting exceptional circumstances that require a caregiver to take on more than 5 patients. Well, again, this is that complaint about a caregiver system and, oh, are you really giving care? Are you wiping their ass and showering them and buying their groceries for them and helping them up and down the stairs or whatever the hell they think caregiving means? What we know what caregiver means is a situation where you have a patient who might be disabled or unskilled in growing marijuana. And giving him care is to grow marijuana for the guy so he can care for his condition. Here's another complaint. Legal restrictions on registry access create barriers for law enforcement agencies to effectively and efficiently enforce the state's medical marijuana laws. Oh no, cops aren't allowed to snoop as much as they'd like in the patient registries? Oh no. Again, medical marijuana is untenable so long as law enforcement has the incentive to go after people who are healthy enough to put in a cage. They are going to try to abuse any medical marijuana registry that comes their way. The problem in any medical marijuana state is trying to keep it just a medical marijuana state. It's not solid. You can't rely on that. It's very volatile, a situation like this, where 90% of the people that want pot aren't sick enough to get it. He further continues in his typical, this is the chronic pain conundrum, right? Where he says, only 3% of users in Colorado reported cancer, and less than 1% reported HIV/AIDS as their reason for marijuana. The vast majority, 94%, reported severe pain. And that is such a weaselly way of bringing up those statistics, because he always leaves out this important little section. I'm looking at the Colorado's website on the statistics for medical marijuana, and indeed, 3% for cancer, 1% for AIDS, 94% for severe pain. But also, 15% for muscle spasms, 11% for severe nausea, 2% for seizures, 1% for glaucoma, and 1% for cachexia. I know I just went to public school, and I didn't go to Oxford like Kevin Sabet, but my mental math on that tells me that's more than 100%. Why is that? Because patients can register for more than one condition, Kevin, and you know that, and you purposefully shade this statistic in a way to make it seem like everyone's faking a backache to get medical marijuana. I crunched the numbers on it. If there's 106,817 patients in Colorado and 100,112 of them are getting it for pain, that leaves 6,705 patients who do not have pain in any way whatsoever. Now, add up all the people who have every other condition. It's 34,392. Subtract the 6,705 that don't have a pain condition. That's 27,687 Coloradans on the registry who are getting it for some other condition and pain. You think cancer might cause some pain? You think HIV AIDS might cause some pain? What about epilepsy? You think there's any pain involved there, Kevin? In fact, these numbers show that fully more than a quarter, 27% of the people registered for pain in Colorado are also registered for some other condition. Be intellectually honest about this, Kevin, if you really want to have the debate. And I didn't get a chance to get to the kids and the marijuana poisonings. Suffice to say, you can't poison anyone with marijuana. I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us here. We'll be in Miami tomorrow. We'll see you then. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you